Hello, everybody. This is kind of part two of the Rewire Your Negative Thoughts training. We didn't quite make it to the end in our awesome class on Tuesday. And so I wanted to give you the rest of the content. If you're listening to this recording and you haven't yet listened to part one, we were together for 2 hours, diving into rewiring your negative thought patterns. We covered a lot. It was just a really, beautiful and awesome call. So listen to that first if you haven't listened to it. And then for this call, I'm going to back up a little bit. I'm going to cover some of the pieces that we covered in part one. And then I'm going to go into more detail on some others. So I'm going to just really start with the 5-part process of rewiring negative thought patterns. And I want to remind you, I said this in our live call, and you know, I'll say it again. I'm laying out 5 linear steps here that can support you as a practitioner to support clients to work on their unhelpful thoughts and to shift them or work with them in better ways. And I'm laying it out in a linear way because I have to, you know, share it in a linear way. But that being said, when you're actually working through the process, it might roll out step by step by step in these 5 steps that I'm sharing, or it might be a little bit more cyclical, or you might use some of your other tools that we've been learning in this program, or you might not use all 5 steps. You know, there's kind of like mixing, matching that can go on as well. So I'm going to lay out the 5 steps, and I'm also, after I do that, I'm going to share with you a case study on this and share with you exactly what the client and I did together, that I think will really be helpful, not only in highlighting the process, but in showing kind of the cyclical nature of all of this. The other thing to remind you of as we go into looking at the pieces and the steps and the tools is to remember to activate more than one level of learning and processing. Don't just keep it on the cognitive level. You can activate the body level, the heart level, or the spirit level, or more than one of those. Your client will have even more of the opportunity to really rewire, Okay. So, all that being said, and taking everything that we looked at in the last 2 hours, let's dive into the steps. And the first step, and I mentioned this on our last call, is really to help the client identify what the negative or the unhelpful thought is. It's hard to work with a thought if you haven't really named it, created awareness on it, identified it. So the first step is to identify it, to name it, because as we looked at on part one of the call, oftentimes your negative thoughts happen so quickly or so persistently that you don't even notice that it's a thought, that it might just be a story. That's just not really helpful for you, that it's not truth, right? You might think it's the truth or it's the way that things need to be, but it's not. So that's why it's so important, first and foremost, And this part, even though I said cyclical, this first step really, you do want to stick to the first step, is to identify what is this thought that isn't so helpful, that may not even be true. You want to use all of your creating awareness skills when you come to support your client to identify the thought. As we looked at in our last class, I think it's really helpful for practitioners to know different types of limiting beliefs or negative thoughts or unhelpful thoughts. And in that last class, I went through some of David Byrne's most common cognitive distortions. It's good to kind of have those in mind as you're listening attentively to your client so that you can kind of detect for yourself when an unhelpful thought is there that maybe because of your filters, you may have even taken as truth as you were listening. So definitely go back and review those if that's something that would be helpful for you, those common cognitive distortions. And then again, you can use all of your creating awareness skills to help your client identify the thought. You can ask different questions. What's the belief that's holding you back right now? What's the story that you're telling yourself right now about this situation? What's the idea that's stopping you in your tracks right now? So any of those can really help your client identify what that not so helpful thought is. That's step one. Step two, once you identify what the thought is, it's really, really helpful to explore the thought, to understand where it's coming from, to understand how it functions, what its bigger impact has been, etc., etc. So you may want to take time with your client in this step to explore the thought more. And you can do this in a couple of different ways in class. Last class, we did it as a visualization where the thought became personified. And one kind of tip on the visualization, kind of like a little bit of an advanced tip, or I guess like a little detail, I shouldn't say advanced, but kind of like a flourish in there, is that when you are inviting your client to personify the negative thought, if you sense it's helpful for your client, you can give them the instruction up front to picture the negative thought or personify the negative thought almost like a caricature, like in a humorous way, is kind of like it the jokey version of itself. Sometimes when you do this, it can then like it kind of allows it to go deep but not be as heavy, if you will. And sometimes it can kind of just open up a little bit, poke some more holes in any resistance, because then it's a little bit more lighthearted. Like, oh, is the negative thought, like a young child with a dunce cap on it, is it silly in some way? It can sometimes help with certain clients. So anyway, the visualization that I modeled for us in class, and you have a handout on it, that's one way that you can support your client to explore the negative thoughts. And of course, the way that I modeled it in class was a kind of a one-to-many model. I wasn't working one-on-one with any of you. I was sort of leading the visualization for everyone in the class. When you when you do this with your clients, it's you have the benefit of it being a much tighter, specific, more detailed container and process, because you'll work it similar to the befriend your fear process, in the sense of, you know, as you ask questions through the process, your client will answer out loud, and then you can formulate your next questions or reflect back based on the answers that your client is giving. And so you can tailor it even more to them and their needs. But that being said, in this step of exploring the negative thought, it doesn't have to be a visualization. You know, for some clients or in some moments, that's not going to be what's best. What's going to be best in order to explore the negative or unhelpful thought is just to ask questions. And you can ask any questions from the visualization. You know, as I mentioned in part one of the class, another question that I love to ask, and you can slip this into the visualization or just ask it, you know, outside of that process, who would you be betraying if you were to be thinking positively here? Who or what part of yourself would you need to forgive if you were to change the thought pattern here? So any types of exploratory questions. And of course, you'll also craft your own based on what you know of your client and what your client is sharing about the situation at hand. The exploration of the negative thought that happens in session might be enough. Or when you go to give homework, you might give some homework that supports the client to continue to explore the thought and get to know it more. This can be really helpful so that what it does is it slows down that really quick thinking process that we were talking about on Tuesday. The more that the client explores and gets to know the thought, the more that your client can actually name it and call it out and slow it down as it fires off in their mind, you know, in their daily life, right? Whenever the thought gets triggered. So I will often invite a client to do some more journaling on the negative thought, for example, or to make a drawing of the negative thought, or a mind map, like what are all of the thoughts that come after the thought? Or I'll invite the client to track that thought throughout the week, right? So there's lots of different ways to continue that exploration. Now the next step, and again, this may not happen next. This step three may happen, you know, much of the time it happens through the exploratory step itself in step two, but I'm just kind of like pulling it out because it can be its own thing as well. Is once you, your client has the opportunity to name the unhelpful negative thought, to explore it, then they can really answer the question of, is this thought actually true? Is it possible that it's not true or not fully true? Or what parts of this are true? Or what parts of this thought are helpful? And which parts of this thought pattern are actually not helpful at all? Right? And we can just kind of like name is not really helpful, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, how true is the thought? So this is really the part of the process where your client can at least begin to cognitively say, oh, wait, maybe I don't have to believe this thought. Just because my mind is serving up this thought to me doesn't mean that it's true, and doesn't mean that I have to believe it, and doesn't mean that I have to follow its directions on an internal or external level, right? So really helping a client be able to tell that difference between what's true and what's story. And we also looked at kind of some of the foundational principles behind that in our 2 hour. Next step, and again, this can happen in step two, it can happen through the visualization, it can just happen through the dialogue exploration, but again, I'm pulling it out. And this is one of those steps that I think are really important and vital to the process. Support your client to identify the higher wisdom. Support your client to identify the higher wisdom. So if the negative or unhelpful thought is just a thought or a story, if it's not the wisdom, if it's not the truth or the highest truth, what is the highest truth or the higher wisdom? We want to support our clients to identify that so that they can start to groove a new neural pathway with that higher thought. Now, a couple of things about the higher wisdom, the higher truth, you know, however you want to call it. One piece here is that this is a place where, just inherent in this step, you're activating the spirit level of learning and processing. Remember, the spirit level of learning and processing is about activating a level of learning and processing that is bigger than the ego. It can be spirit, higher wisdom, great grandmother Betty, earth wisdom, you know, whatever it is, but it's something that is bigger than the client's ego. And the reason why this kind of wisdom can be so potent for an individual is because if it's bigger than the ego, it's something that we can cultivate trust in. It's something that we can cultivate trust in. So that's one piece here with what's the higher wisdom. The next piece with what's the higher wisdom? Oh, it just flew out of my mind. Hold on a second. What was the other piece with what's the higher wisdom? Oh, I remember. This is a place where a lot of traditional coaching and, like, kind of, I don't know what you want to call it, like, I don't know, spiritual something can kind of go awry. The higher wisdom, it's usually not helpful if it's something like, I will be rich. That's not really like a higher wisdom. That's kind of a wish, right? I will be rich. I will lose 20 pounds. I will bring in 5 clients by next week. Like, those are beautiful, I don't know, intentions, wishes, goals, but I wouldn't call that higher wisdom or a higher truth. Higher wisdom or higher truth is more like something that is the truth is applicable no matter what, right? Whether I become rich tomorrow or next week or never in terms of money in my bank account, right? If that's what the person is working on, right? So for example, like an example of higher wisdom is, so long as I'm connected to the love in my life, I feel abundance. Right? Or I have the best chance at increasing my bank account when I'm being my authentic self. right? Just as some examples, like that's higher wisdom versus like, I, you know, I will whatever. The I will be rich or I will lose 20 pounds, it's can sometimes be hard for a client to believe that. I think that's still coming from the ego and not coming from the spirit level. Once a client identifies what the higher wisdom or the higher truth is, not always, but I often like to bring the body level of learning and processing into it. It's a beautiful moment to do that. For those of you that stuck on to the very end of our call on Tuesday, I did that with Cecil. So you can just go back and listen, watch the last few minutes if you want to see. But you know, she shared the higher wisdom that came out of the visualization. And then I led her through, it was very short. It probably was a minute and a half process, 2 minutes, where I helped her anchor this new thought or this higher wisdom into her body. And I helped her feel it in her body, anchor it, and make a body memory of it. That can be really helpful. And that goes back to what I was saying on Tuesday about how and why mantras work. They're mostly not used effectively in the coaching industry, but you know, scientific research has been done on why mantras do often work in the Hindu religion, and it's not about the words, it's about the body. It's about the tunes and the rhythms and the singing of the mantras, and then how that affects the body and how that feels in the body, and then how that shifts the mind. Okay, and then the last step in the process is, now it's like at this point you've created a new neural pathway by doing all the work that we've done up until now. You've created a new neural pathway with the higher wisdom. And so now the next step is more deeply grooving that new neural pathway so that it becomes more of the go-to thought and the go-to place for that client. And you can continue to groove that new neural pathway by persistently and consistently coming back to the higher wisdom. You know, you can use it in that mantra way, singing, chanting. You can come back to that anchored feeling in the body. You can journal on the new, you know, the higher wisdom piece and keep on coming back to it. You can create a collage that represents the higher wisdom. And then also, and this is an important piece, you can take baby steps that are based on the higher wisdom. You can take baby outer action steps that are based in the higher wisdom, right? So if the higher wisdom, for example, is so long as I'm connected to my authenticity, I'll be able to attract new clients. Then you can ask your client, what's one outer action step that's based in this that you can do this week? And they may say, like, write a social media post that's based in my authenticity. Send an outreach note to this person who I think would be a great prospect, but like write that note from my authenticity, right? Whatever it is. Rewrite my homepage from my authenticity. Tr- tracking the old thought and then replacing it with the new one throughout the week, another way to groove the neural pathway more deeply. Taking a walk that embodies the new thought, the higher wisdom, the higher truth, and really, like, through that walk, embodying it, that's a way to more deeply groove it. Doing a dance that evokes the higher wisdom, right? Any of those types of things. Okay, so all that being said, I wanted to just share with you a case study on all of this that I think could be really helpful. So this case study, the client came in and the intention for the session that the client articulated was that she wanted to get clarity on the next steps for her relationship. And we took a little time. It did take a little bit of time to pinpoint, but after I asked her some questions, she said that if she stays in the relationship that she's in, she won't get her needs met and she's going to have to sacrifice a lot. But if she chooses to leave the relationship, that she'll be alone. And as she shared this, it was clear that this was a negative thought or a limiting or unhelpful belief, right? That she can either be in a relationship and not get her needs met, or she can be alone, right? And even when she was sharing this, you know, and it was such all or nothing thinking. That was one of the cognitive distortions, right, we looked at. It was like such all or nothing thinking. She was even making hand gestures with her hands, one side this and one side the other, right? Which can often be a clue that there's all or nothing thinking going on. So I reflected back those hand motions that and her words that she was making. And then I pointed out that, of course, she was having trouble making a decision about how to move forward with the relationship because she didn't want either of those alternatives. You know, if the thinking was she's either not going to get, if she can be in a relationship but not get her needs met, or try to get her needs met, but then she's going to be alone, that was leaving her with very few choices, right? So that was step one. I helped her identify the unhelpful thought. And this was an all or nothing thinking unhelpful thought. From there, we moved on to step two, which was we spent some time going deeper with that thought. And exploring it. And as we took a deeper look at it, and we didn't do this via visualization. It was really just through regular dialogue. You know, but as I asked questions, what really came to the surface is that she shared that this has always been her experience since she was a baby, that if she was going to be in relationship with others, she wasn't going to be get her needs met. She was going to have to sacrifice. So it was always either be alone or sacrifice and not get needs met, right? So she was able to see this through the exploration. She was able to see that this is how she's always approached relationships then. Since then, all of her relationships have been like that. And she was also able to see that this thought was really what was keeping her in her indecision about the current relationship, about whether to go or leave or what to do. From there, we moved on to step three. And we looked at does this belief have to be true? And I brought back the visual metaphor that she had originally used with the hands, one side or the other. And you know, I said on this side you have a relationship that doesn't meet your needs, and on this, and I put my other hand really far away, on this other hand, it's just you're alone. And I said, does this have to be true? Is it possible that there's another way to approach being in relationship? And she said, yeah, there can be another way. This doesn't have to be true. There can be another truth. But she was really hesitant about it. She wasn't totally buying it yet, right? And I share that with you because it's not always gonna be this seamless, like, okay, now the paths are open. And of course, it's not true, right? So, and it doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong or you're doing a bad job or that the process isn't going exactly as it's meant to. It just means that humans are humans are humans are humans, right? So she was able to see, like, yeah, there can be another way here to approach relationships, but she was hesitant about it. And so I decided to go a little deeper with her, and so I said, well, what would that middle place be? What would that different perspective on relationship be? And this was kind of step four, right? What's the higher wisdom here, right? So, what is a different perspective on the relationship? I didn't bring the higher wisdom word. Phrasing in there yet. And she said, well, I don't know what that other perspective would be because I've never experienced it. She was kind of starting to go back into her resistance, right? Like, and a little bit into like some victimhood and frustration, right? I don't know, I've never experienced it. So how should I know what this other perspective can be on relationships? And I continued to hold my love and respect for this client. I continued to know that she was whole and complete no matter what, right? Like, I just, the energetics, so important when resistance comes up. And I kept on going. And I said, I get that, you know, that because you've never experienced relationship in any other way, it would be hard to know. But let me ask you, like, if you were to just take a guess, right? Like, from just the highest, if spirit were to help you here, and this was a client that believes in spirit, right? Let me say, like, if spirit were to be guiding you here and telling you here, and if you were to take a guess based on what spirit is telling you, even if you don't believe it, what would this new perspective on relationships be? And you could see, like, it dropped right in for her. And she said, I can have a relationship without sacrificing myself, right? That was the higher wisdom that came in. I can have a relationship without sacrificing myself. And so I paused there. I really let that beautiful piece of truth and higher wisdom drop in. I gave it some space, right? So for her, just to let it sink in. And then I said, ah, okay. And I repeated back to her, right? I can have a relationship without sacrificing myself. And then I wanted to go deeper, especially because I knew that there was resistance. I wanted to help her anchor this more deeply for herself. And so I said, even if most of you doesn't believe this truth, that you can have a relationship without sacrificing yourself, where is the place in your body, even if it's in the ittiest, bittiest, smallest place, where is the place in your body that does believe this? And she sensed into her body and she said, my belly, I do believe this in my belly. And so from there, we really anchored this belief into her belly. And when I asked her how this belief that she can have a relationship without sacrificing herself, how it felt in her belly, she said it felt relaxed and alived and held. Now, at that point, I really, really wanted to ask her about like what's a next step, or what, how, based on all of this, how do you want to move forward with your relationship? But I knew that it was all so tender that she wasn't ready to answer that question just yet. I could really sense that she needed more time to really lean more into this new belief that she didn't have to choose being alone or sacrificing herself, right? The more that she could believe that she could be in a relationship and get all of her needs met, or get her needs met, then she would be ready to make a decision about her current relationship. So, for as much as I wanted to ask her how she wanted to move forward with the relationship, I didn't. And instead, I said something like, my sense is that the more that you lean into this new belief, the more clarity you're gonna get about the relationship, and the more that you'll be able to trust whatever decision comes. Does that resonate? And she said yes. And so we crafted homework for her to go deeper with the new neural pathways. And the homework was for her to journal from this new belief, and then to continue to come back to the feeling of it in her belly. That was one full session. We eventually, as I think it took another session or two, she really worked on that new belief and continuing to anchor it inside of herself and journal on it and lean into it. And I did eventually ask her, so from this wisdom, how would you like to move forward? It was a couple weeks later. And at that point, she was ready to leave the relationship. It just, she could see she was never going to get her needs met there. But she did believe that even if it took work, even if she had to be alone for a while, that she would eventually find a relationship where she could get her needs met, where she wouldn't have to sacrifice herself. All right. I hope this was really helpful. There was one more piece that I just wanted to share on all of this, just kind of like an additional little piece that I think is just has been really helpful for me, both for myself and my own negative thoughts, and then as a practitioner with clients, which is that my thoughts are always less helpful to me when I'm not taking good care of myself and my body. And they are I tend to have way more helpful thoughts when I am getting enough sleep and I am eating enough and I am, taking breaks and staying grounded and taking care of my well-being. Our mental activity is often related to the our containers, which are our bodies, right? Our bodies are kind of the containers for our brains, where our thoughts are. So whenever I am particularly like in catastrophic thinking and stewing in it, or if I have a client that is, one of the pieces that we'll also work on is better self-care, because it really can make a difference. Okay, I hope that this was helpful. I am really excited for you to practice all of this. And of course, if you have any questions, please ask. And I'd love to hear just takeaways from this recording. Sending you all lots of love.